I'm Emily Theed, author of This Vicious Grace, coming in summer 2022 from Wednesday Books.
And I'm Anna, a teacher and a writer in the Queery Trenches.
And you're listening to Basic Pitches, where we...
Two basic pitches.
Break down the basics of writing and being a writer. We are ASMR episode. Where we embrace the sounds and we just say, it's gonna make noise.
It's gonna make... Welcome to our noisy episode. The start of 2022.
Yeah, which is...
Or the 2022 season.
Yeah, because, 2022 is just, like, going gangbusters. Just zipping on by.
It is.
Which is weird.
Time is a construct. Actually, I learned a thing. Can we, like, I'm going to throw this random thing out.
Teach me.
I forgot what this theory is called, but there is a theory that looks at why time passes quicker when you are older.
Oh, I've heard this. I find it so depressing, right?
No, I know. But, like, it's done the opposite for me.
Okay.
Like, I'm not depressed. Like, I have a terrible fear of, like, death and dying. Mm-hmm. Like, that is existential fear. Don't even want to think about it. Don't want to think about what happens to my soul, my whatever. Don't want to think about it. We're just, like, the good place help, and it hurt. Because it was like, mm-hmm. we're just like, we go back to the wave. And I'm like, that's comforting.
Yeah.
Okay. So for this, I was like, that's depressing. But now it's, like, pushed me to live a little differently. The theory is that when you, like, get older, you stop experiencing things for the first time. Mm-hmm. So when you experience something for the first time, your brain is taking up a lot of space and time and energy on learning it and figuring it out and processing it. And that processing, when you're a child, everything seems so long because everything is so new. And then when you get older, you just keep doing, like, same stuff for a different day. And so, like, you just have to keep having new experiences.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like this start of 2022 has gone by so quickly because nothing is new.
That makes a good case for travel, which is already where my head is. So that's, like, a good place to be because I'm at the point
about travel.
Yeah, I've been talking about traveling for a long time, and obviously the world has not cooperated, but I think we're hitting that point where it's like, not sure it's going to get any better. So I might as well just get on the plane. So we will see. But now I have completely absurd dreams and wishes because I'm like, maybe I could, like, pull off a trip to Italy in, like, April, which is a horrible idea to try to plan a trip in 6 to 8 weeks with small children, like, right before my book comes out. But Italy in the summer is really hot. And then the new school year starts. So I don't know. It's probably not going to happen because I don't have the brain space to, like, respond to emails, much less plan an international trip. But it's nice to just have it out there. Like, you know what? I could just be like, screw it. I'm on a plane.
I was going to say, that's what the term the kids invented a long time ago called YOLO is for.
Yes.
You just do it. You just get your whole family on a plane and go.
Yeah. I'm using it as, like, a carrot. Like, if I can get this draft in a place where I'm like, yeah, I got this, then I'll call up a travel agent and just be like, is this possible? Tell me. That's all. So just the motivation is just I'm allowed to think about it. If I get to a point where this drafts. Because if it's not, then I can't justify going anywhere for 10
You'll days. Get there.
Yeah, but by then, I don't know. You know. We all know our process. We know that, you know, there's still a finite amount of work you can do in a finite amount of time. So there's kind of a critical mass.
Where are you at in your process? Let's get an update. Sure, as much or as little as you want.
I have about 70,000 words. I think the first half is coming together pretty well. The third act is starting to fall into place. Fourth act I have not written yet. But I'm at that point where I can't tell if it's any good because I'm too in it, you know? So my agent has looked at it and she sees some gold in there, but I don't know what percentage of it is gold. And my editor is looking at it right now. The good news, I guess, is that the thought of sending a half-baked draft to either one of them would have terrified me a year ago, and now I'm so deep in the throes of second book torment that I'm like, just take it. Like, now we're all in the poop together. Like, welcome to the hell pit. So, yeah. So it's taken away the anxiety of that, because I'm like, help me, I'm drowning. Just someone pull me out. So,
I don't like that you're drowning.
Yeah.
I like that you have reached a place where you recognize, I don't know, for me, it's like your agent and your editor are your cohorts in this. Like, they are they're in it as well as you, right? They've signed on for this, so you can be like, all right.
Yeah, I think I got to that place earlier with my agent, because it was like, once we sold a book, I was like, all right, now, like, we're both on the line here now. Whereas my editor, there's still a bit more of that fear of, like, oh, no. Like, she's going to be looking at it from the lens of, like, I got someone to pay money for this. But also, like, you got somebody to pay money for it, so, like, help me. But, yeah. But she tends to have a lot of kind of chaotic authors. So when she says, I've seen a lot of messy drafts, I'm just hoping that I don't take the cake. But I told her if it is the messiest thing she's ever seen, then I would like a trophy to put on my mantle. So we'll see.
I like that.
Yeah. Embracing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't. I hope you don't get that trophy, but.
But hey.
What if Vicky actually did send you a trophy?
That would be hilarious. And then I know I can get it good. And then I get to be like, look, you saw the before and here's the after. And so that will be fun.
That'll be good. It will be good.
It's like opening a trapdoor into my brain and being like, it's a real mess in here. I'm sorry. Welcome. Welcome to the mess brain. But it is what it is. So all I have to do now is deliver. And then once I deliver, then it's all fine. Then it's like, wow, can you believe? Got from that to that. Like, hey. Right. Which is what happens. So it is what it is.
Right, right.
But you have been very, very busy over the past few months. So, yeah. Tell the world what you've been up to.
Yeah. So I think we talked about it. Maybe. I don't know. But I was in Pitch Wars again, which is.
Courageous.
Kind of. Yeah. You know, I thought. I don't know. I thought going into it that I would be, like, immune from being stressed out.
Nah.
Like, there was something. Because I wasn't stressed. I was not stressed at any point until, like, 3 weeks before the showcase. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, uh-oh. Oh, no. All these feelings. Like, and most of them didn't have to do with the showcase. Like, most of my feelings really did not have to do with the showcase. Like, I really didn't care about that.
Yeah.
Which sounds weird.
Well, you've been through it. You know it's not everything.
I think that's, like, a really big thing is that I understood, I recognized it as, and this is, like, all over the place. There's no linear discussion to how this was. But the showcase itself, I recognize as it could be something.
Mm-hmm.
And I should treat it as such. Like, I should give it my best and give it my all. It could turn into big things. Or it could be nothing. And no matter what, I did my best. And then there's querying. So, you know, that helped a bit.
Yeah, which is a good attitude to have. Because I think it's easy to get swept up and, like, it's a magic bullet. And just hardly anything is. I mean, even at best, like, a rock star showcase is just it. Makes things happen faster. Like, it doesn't change what happens. It just makes them happen faster. And I think that's a big distinction people don't get. They think if you don't have a great showcase that, like, that means something. It doesn't. It just means your first step was a little faster. That's all.
That, and I think that's a big thing that a lot of people are learning as of us recording this. I think a lot of people are learning that right now is that it really doesn't mean good or bad things. It just means quick. It's quickness.
Yeah.
And I've tried comparing it to that, like, Disney Fast Track, you know, Disney Fast Pass of querying. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And even for people who, you know, I was fortunate to have a couple of requests. I sent those. And other than, thanks, I got it, it's been utter silence for a week now.
I think it has been for most people.
Whatever.
Because, I mean, there are going to be a few that get an offer early and then they nudge everybody else.
Sure.
And then all the agents have to run over there. But, like, that doesn't mean they don't love the other stuff.
Yeah.
It's just... Yeah.
It's the business side of things, I think.
It is funny, though, because my agent is super responsive, and I have noticed, like, the past few days I'll send an email, I won't hear anything, and technically she's on vacation, but I'm pretty sure on vacation just means I'm reading submissions, like, that's all I'm doing.
Right.
But it's funny, because I'm like, you know that agents are just, like, just nose to the grindstone when Chelsea doesn't respond to emails.
Right.
For, like, we're talking, like, a day here. I'm not calling her out on anything, but, yeah.
No.
They're working hard. They're reading. And I have 3 books to read because I'm moderating a panel for the Virginia Festival of the Book in March. And, like, I have 3 books to read for that. I've read one. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I have, like, 2 more books to read and, like, stuff to prepare. And then I'm like, oh, agents are reading, like, dozens of books. So maybe I should stop complaining. But I do have to write a book, too. With the agents don't have to write a book. So I don't know. It's all relative. But
right. It's one of the mentees and I were, like, lamenting, like, you know, what are they doing? Don't they have anything better to do? They just have our books to read. And, like, we were joking, clearly joking. Like, we were not like, me, 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 me. But we were very much like, all they have to do is read, like, 50 books very quickly in a week to catch up with these offers. That's all.
It's like every time, like, I have to reread my own book, like, for past pages, I'm always like, well, like, this won't take long. Like, Emily, yes, it will. Of course it will. Like, even if it's my book, it's still, like, it's still a lot of pages. You just can't read that fast. So every time. Every time. No. I'm like, I can do this in an hour. No, I cannot. No, I cannot. I cannot do that in an hour. So
I was there this past week where I was like, I'll just give it one more pass.
Yeah, and just a little skim.
Like, it'll take this afternoon.
No.
What?
No.
It's almost 90K, Anna. You cannot read that in two hours. However cool you think you are.
We do like to delude ourselves, though, don't we?
You know. Yes. You know.
Yeah. But so how was your, do you have, I don't want to, like, put you on the spot, but how would you compare your first pitch wars to your second? Did you learn new things? Did you have a different approach to it? How'd that all go?
No. So this time, I've been kind of open about my, like, first experience. I was very, like, very green, very new. Same. Like, writing. Totally, totally new. I didn't know anything. And Lindsay taught me, my first mentor, she taught me, like, everything about world building and pacing. And really, like, world building and pacing were the big things. And then we started working on character. And that was kind of the second thing that kind of, like, that fell into place between these two Pitch Wars books.
Yeah.
And then this time, it was kind of interesting because when I applied, I told, you know, the mentors, you get to tell on your application, like, what do you think you need help with? And I was like, I really think I need somebody, like, I have all these pieces. I've learned everything. I learned about world building and pacing and character arcs and theme and all these different elements. But I don't know how to cohesively bring them together. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's too cluttered. Like, nothing has focus. And when Sunya and I started working, which, by the way, my mentor was Sunya Mara, please pre-order The Darkening. It's
yes.
Chef Kiss, and she's brilliant.
And we got to meet her when we were at Y'all Fest, which was very exciting.
That was so nice. But she really helped do that.
That's awesome.
In a way that really jived with me. And I think the biggest thing that I would love to, like, for people to take away from, like, my experience was, like, learning to be self-sufficient with my own writing.
Ooh. I would like to learn that.
I know.
As I'm out here like, please, editor and agent, help me.
I know. I'm like, it was the perfect blend. I needed Lindsay to really hold my hand that first time. And this time, Sunya was very much a mentor who was like, if you need anything, you can contact me, whatever. But she was always big about the note beneath the note. So if I contacted her with something like, this character isn't working, she would talk about, okay, well, what you're saying is, let's look at why this character isn't working. You're saying it's because it's not threatening enough. This character isn't threatening enough. The note beneath that note is, we need some way to make him more threatening or make this scene more threatening. And that to me was like the biggest thing that I could do for myself. So whenever I sat down and something wasn't working, something wasn't connecting, something wasn't clicking, it wasn't jumping off the page yet, I would ask, okay, why isn't it jumping off the page? And really a lot of the revision process was just me pushing forward on my own, asking for help when I needed it, and then using those tools she gave me. So totally different experience.
That's very cool. I like that we're almost in like opposite places. Where, like, you had this great experience of someone pushing you to, like, be more independent, whereas I spent the past year and a half being like, I'm going to show them I can do it myself. And then finally I was like, I can't do it myself. And I feel like everyone was like, you should have just told us you needed help 6 months ago. Yeah. But I think those are both equally valuable lessons to learn in writing. Like, there are times where you have to trust yourself and push yourself to do it on your own. And there are times where if you're spinning your wheels for too long, it's like, stop being so proud and just, like, get an extra set of eyes on it. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And I am the kind of personality that will fall into the quit being so proud category. Because I am very much like, I can do it myself.
I am too. And I think for me, the big shift has been going from being a writer that was just writing with other writers to being a quote-unquote professional, which I guess I don't have to quote because it is a real thing. Yeah. I'm getting paid. That's not a label. That's just a thing. That, like, for wonderful reasons, my critique partners and a lot of the people that I was kind of bouncing stuff back and forth with have had a lot going on recently. You know, I mean, you're doing pitch wars. Other people are doing pitch wars. People are mentoring. People have book deals. And so I tried to reshape my process and be like, all right, well, like my usual brainstorm buddies aren't available, so I will just do it myself. And what I realized is that some things I can shift and grow and change and do myself, but I am someone who has always needed a give and take to get through the brainstorming process. It's not the actual writing or revising. It's just I need to, just like I can't brainstorm a book without actually writing it, I also can't brainstorm a book without talking about it with people. And so my desire to not be a burden to my editor and my agent backfired because they don't see it as a burden. They want to be a part of it. And so just by saying, like, I need to talk to someone, and my someones are all busy with great things right now, if I had done it 6 months ago, I think I would be in a much different place. So that's my message to writers is don't spin your wheels for a year because you're afraid to say, hey, I need to talk to somebody. Are you available? Because a lot of times they are. And yeah.
Right. Right. It's a weird, tricky balance. I think you're also, like, just from an outside perspective, I think you're learning a different process than any of your other processes, mm-hmm. processes, whatever you want to call them. is you're learning to write a book with the support of an agent and an editor. That's totally different than anything else you've ever done.
Oh, it is. Yeah, I don't like it. It's, I mean, so I different. Do. I'm not saying I don't like it. I do. I love, they're great, but I like to be able to be like, here is all the hard work I've done behind the scenes with my sneaky secret friends. I'm still getting used to being like, here's the mess, professional humans. But really, the experience has taught me that, like, they are fine with it. They know this about us. Even if at times editors or agents aren't necessarily the same chaos monsters that we are, they are used to us chaos monsters, and I needed to trust that they weren't going to be like, just kidding, we're taking back all your dreams now because you have revealed what happens behind the curtain. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been good. But yeah, I'm feeling that deadline breathing down my neck. But we're going to get there. We're going to get there.
You're going to get there.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
Yeah.
You've reached out.
I've reached out. I've reached up as I fall down the pit of despair. I've reached up and my hand was grabbed and we're all good now. But
they got it.
But yes.
They got you.
So are you riding the wait? Are you taking a break? What is your recovery period here?
So I really don't. This is the first time. So I'll go back to something I think you've called me out on this podcast, or at least in private.
Oh, I hope so.
Which is that I don't actually query things.
You don't.
I like.
So just like three people, and then you're like, well, that was fun. And then you stop, which I have resisted the urge to ask you.
That's okay.
But I'm just looking in a loving way. I'm
totally open with this process. Open with this process. So anybody can learn or judge me or whatever, or they can know this is valid. So my thought process first, before I get to like what I'm doing, is Sunya kind of is very much a person who is like, no, go for the top.
Yeah.
Like, go for it. Shoot your shot. Like, why are you wasting your time otherwise? And I'm like, oh, okay. So I have currently a list of like maybe 30 agents that I would be delighted to work with. And I've sent out 10 of those. And like every time a rejection or a request or something rolls in that's like a response, I check another one out there. Okay. And I will like preface this saying I don't have dream agents, quote unquote, around those. I don't do that. I have agents that I would really, really love to work with and I'd be very, very excited to work with. But it really keeps me open to like somebody else who might come in and be like the perfect match, whatever. So I have shotgunned a whole bunch of queries out there, a whole bunch of requests from pitch wars. They are out there. They are floating in inboxes somewhere. I don't do well with this wait time.
No.
Not chilling with that.
No.
Like, after being somebody who gives up after five.
Which really does put things in context because I'm like, Anna, you have to, you can't, they can't want it. They can't, if they don't see it, they got to see it. You got to throw it out there. I've been talking a lot to my mentee, Sophie, about this whole process of querying and how we look back on other people's roads and feel like it happened so fast. But I've done a bit of a searching of previous people and even just telling Sophie, like, oh, hey, like, this person who got, like, a really quick offer, that was in April, has been enlightening for all of us. You know, like, Lissa last year, who I think had an absolute, like, dream Pitch Wars experience her second time around, and she earned it. She worked her butt off. You know, she signed with her agent, I think it was in April or May or something, which, like, people look back now, and they're like, oh, she signed right away. And I'm like, no, she didn't. Like, it still took a few months. But when... It feels different when you're the one waiting for it versus when you're the one on the outside being like, oh, wow, that was so fast. So, yeah, time. Yeah. Time is relative. That's our theme.
There it is. We're back to time. Yep. Because there was something I was looking at my inbox and I was like, I just keep thinking of that meme that's the stick figure with a stick and it's just poking the ground, like poking something saying do something.
I believe Sophie sent me that.
Yeah, that's me. Like I'm just poking my inbox saying do something. And I have to remind myself that the showcase was a week ago.
It feels like it was like a month ago.
You little mushroom witch woman. What? Yeah. What are you doing? Like calm down.
I know. I was like, as soon as the showcase is over, I'm going to dedicate myself and I'm gonna finish this draft by March. And I'm like, well, how is it all almost March? But also, like, that wasn't that long ago. I don't understand what just happened. Time doesn't exist. So, yeah.
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 Yeah. So currently, I'm just filling my time with lots of things. So I started doing some like furniture restoration again. I deep cleaned my house.
Nice. If you get bored, my house has plenty of stuff to clean.
I'll come to your house because I love cleaning. There's that.
I only love cleaning when I am way late on a deadline and I'm trying to avoid writing. That's the only time my house is clean is when I'm like, I'll just clean for a couple days. And everyone's like, aren't you supposed to be working on something?
See, I guarantee I'll be there again in about a month. You'll hear me talk about deep cleaning my house because then I'll actually have to start writing this new idea because it'll be done, brainstormed. So, you know. Everybody call me on that.
I'm prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if I'm really doing well, like, if I'm working my butt off with writing, my house is a disaster. Mm-hmm. And if I cannot figure out how to work well at writing, then my house gets real clean real fast.
Right? So, yeah. Right?
Inversely related.
Time, the only reason our house still exists is because my husband is wonderful.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yep. Oof. Feel that. Yikes. Writer spouses deserve their own... Like, there should be a word for that, because I feel like that is a very special kind of human and what they have to deal with. Yeah.
Straight up.
It's a lot.
Straight up.
Because, yeah, we are creatures of chaos. Even the organized ones. We are all creatures of chaos. So, yes.
Absolutely. There were many nights of me being, like, explaining the whole plot of my book for a very specific question. And he's like, I don't. Yep. I don't know.
I do that, too.
I'm like, why aren't you any help?
I use my children. I'll be like, can I just tell you the whole story real quick, even though you are
back to the beginning.
Small children and you have not read book one, we're just going to talk through this real fast because I need to say it out loud and you are here, so
you are you have a brain that can interpret my words.
Just nod and smile. Thank you so much. I owe you forever. So
I need you to give me the exact response I need or else I will self-combust.
Basically. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Now I'm trying to really think of, like, what has happened since our last episode. And I'm like, everything? Like,
everything.
I don't even know if I'd announced my UK stuff. I got, like, other covers and stuff. I don't even know. But people, if you don't follow me on social media, maybe go do that and scroll backwards. Because
there's a lot. You got a lot of this vicious grace to catch up on.
A lot of, yeah. My current dilemma is the whole, like, two covers that don't have matching color schemes. I love them both, but I don't do Instagram very well. And the only thing I had figured out was pick a color scheme and just do everything in that color scheme. And now I don't have it. So if I disappear from Instagram, that's why. I got nothing.
You'll be fine.
Yeah.
You'll be fine.
Sorry.
You can figure that out.
Yeah.
Look at our friend Meg Long. She does it.
Meg's crushing it. Yeah. Meg's doing great.
She crushes it at social media.
I got her little wolf necklace. I'm very excited. I'm a sucker for pre-order goodies, even though I don't have space for them, but I love them.
Sorry. We have to talk about it. Have you seen Emily Taylor's pre-order goodies for her Hotel Magnifique? Oh.
And I need to.
My gosh.
Also, why have we not had her on the show yet? Note to self.
I know.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. She's on my list of people to...
Oh, my gosh. That's so soon.
I know. We have a lot of work to do. hers are, okay, so you know it's Hotel Magnifique.
Hotel Magnifique,
right?
Like yes.
We know, if you don't know the premise of Hotel Magnifique,
it's great.
Stop the podcast right now. Go look it up on Goodreads and then come on back.
Yeah. Or check in okay, later when back. We have her on.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And we make her pitch it. Yes.
She has luggage
Yay!
Tags, leather luggage tags with a quote from her book on
I
it.
I love that.
I am obsessed.
This is my dilemma, though, is I always want all the goodies, but there's a part of me that's like, no, I should let other people have them. I don't want to make my friends send stuff out, but I do because they want it.
Yeah.
So,
no, want it. It's
I
fine.
Do want it. I'm like, it's supposed to be motivation
like that.
For people. I'm like, I've already pre-ordered it a while ago, but if you want to give me a prize for it.
That.
Yeah. I always have that. A special feeling when I send the pre-order form into like Wednesday, like my own publisher. I always feel like I should like put a note that's like, sorry, it's just me. Like, you can Hi. Put me at the bottom of the pile. But I love goodies. They're so fun.
Gotta get the goodies. Get all
my goodies.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. You better believe I'm getting that luggage tag.
Oh, yeah. I want it, too.
I will fist bite somebody.
And then I have one. To take a trip to justify yeah. having a luggage tag.
Perfect.
So it's perfect. Yes.
It's the universe telling you what to do there, Emily.
I'm trying. But yeah. So.
Yeah.
Do you have ideas for future projects, or are you enjoying having a clear and empty brain for a while?
No, I enjoy having a clear and empty brain.
That's nice.
But I do have a project. It's the one I started for NaNoWriMo
cool.
before.
You've been busy.
I'm going back to that. Do it.
You've been busy thinking of stuff.
Yeah. I can't like I always like having something in my head to like poke at or dream about.
Yeah.
And this one has just been there, and like I even caught myself during Pitch Wars being like, I can't wait to dive into that. That'll be fun. So I'll
That's
take
awesome.
Oh, have you ever heard of pitch decks?
No.
Oh.
Pitch decks? I can't even spell it in my head. What is this? Pitch decks?
Thank you, Emily Miner and Kat Corby for telling me about pitch decks because they rock my world. So you can create a pitch deck on anything, on Google Slides, on Canva, on whatever, Microsoft PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Go get some flashcards. Make a pitch deck. But it's basically where you compile all of your ideas for a new project.
Mm-hmm.
So you come up with the log line, the pitch or whatever. You come up with the title. You make it all decorative too. So it's all very thematic. Like I have a very dramatic, melodramatic Baz Luhrmann style brain.
Yeah. It's a good place to be as a YA fantasy writer. Yeah.
It's so nice. Mm-hmm. But it has to have like pictures and it has to have songs and it has to have like adjectives and things like that really describe like the world you're living
Sorry.
In.
Adjectives like, just made me laugh. Words
I know,
and pictures and adjectives.
They're floating around.
Cool. Yes. Great.
Random adjectives. Just like
floating around.
Fogging up my brain. But it's like a slideshow of all these things. So of the theme, of the characters, of the setting, of the like the one card I really enjoy is the adjectives card because you come up with like what you want your story to feel like. So, you know, for this one, it's one of my adjectives is wild.
Oh.
So it's like feral. It's
Wait, you have mentioned this project to me because there were things that I was terrified of. Not like because I have some very weird phobias.
Get ready.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. Anna writes Southern Gothic adult.
I think I sent you.
Romance.
Did I? I don't know if I sent you or you sent me or there was some combination or I tweeted something about the sink, it's like a pond and then there's like a big old mine sinky holy cavey thing. And I was like, I hate it. And you're like, I love it. And I was like, all right, well, you're not the same
that's
person.
What this whole book is.
Uh-huh. Emily's nightmares come to life.
Sorry, Emily.
That's okay. It's all right.
But pitch deck is like a totally like awesome way of planning your story out visually and aesthetically and really getting that vibe down and like not having – it's not about the plot. It's not about the beats. It is about just getting all the major pieces out there first.
Cool.
Yeah. So I started doing that. That was a big thing I learned at the end of Pitch Wars in preparation for a new project.
Very cool. I like that. Mm. I feel like your original plotter self has really embraced different approaches, which is cool and fun.
I was absolutely in some people's DMs last night being like, all right, how do you go about starting a new project? Help me out.
Seriously. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a good question. It's a whole 10 episode miniseries.
A lot more complicated and a lot simpler than I thought it would be. Like, yeah. I don't know about you. I feel like for me, whenever I hear of somebody fast drafting something in like a month, I'm like, how did your brain go from no concept to a whole book in a month? And the truth is,
they don't.
That's not it.
No, and that's because I'm a fast drafter in normal land time, but I don't go from nothing to a whole book. I go from nothing to something. I just, and I usually end up with like some of a plot and a most of a character and a bit of a stuffs, and then the revision is where I do all my work. So
That's like been the biggest, like somebody ripped the veil off and like I can see the wizard behind the curtain kind of thing. Like when people sit down to write a pitch or the start of a project, they don't know the whole plot. No. They know like, they know something about it that's going to keep them going. So they know a desire for the character or they know like, here's the trope I'm going to play around with. Here's the, you know, big scene I'm going to write to. They have something that guides them forward. But other than that,
I feel like everyone has their door and everyone has a different door. Like for some people, like it's vibes. And for some people, it's the plot. And for some people, it's the character. And you need the door. But you also just need to walk through the door. And for some people, they like to think it all through before they walk through the door. And other people, they walk through it and then kind of wander around in the dark, bumping into walls, which would be me. But the trick is to figure out, like, what is the most efficient door for you? And then kind of one step at a time. And for some people, again, there's a lot of thinking before any words go on the page. For me, I can think for 1,000 years and nothing will happen. I need a concept or an inspiration or a something, but I have to just walk through the door blindfolded and then bump into walls to figure out the actual other stuff. And once you figured out what your entryway is, then just like, just walk through the door. Just walk through the door and then take the next step. Like whatever your next step is, but it's not going to be the same for everyone. So
that's so true. I really like that idea of finding the door like that. Cause that's really it for me. I have to have a character, the vibes, and like a scene or two that I'm really excited to write.
Yeah.
And then I can walk through the door.
I love that. Whereas I feel like for me, it's usually an interpersonal vibe and a dilemma. And that's kind of it. I usually don't have that's a scene. I just have this like tension between two individuals, which is why I do write a lot of stuff that is romance heavy, because that depends on two characters that have a thing or a thing that brings them together or apart. And a lot of times I don't have the vibes. Like when I started writing This Vicious Grace, I didn't have the setting. I didn't have any of that. Like that all came later.
Right.
I just had this personality contrast that I wanted to play with and a thematic contrast. And once I started playing with it, then the rest all fell into place later. But yeah, brains are
weird. I like
that.
Yeah. I like that idea, especially with that one, because it works so well because you have a desire.
Yeah.
And the dilemma make it so she can't act on the desire.
Yep.
And then you add in a romantic attraction.
Yep. Yeah. Someone asked me how I came up with they said, how did you tie in like the world stakes and the character stakes? And I was like, oh, I just started with like, what if you couldn't touch someone? How can I make that as bad as possible? I was like, make it so you have to touch someone to save the world. And also make it so that you have a bodyguard in your room that you would like to touch. And I just started with the problem and the want. And then I just kept asking myself, well, how could it be worse? How could it be worse? How could it be more important and worse? And then I added like the set dressing later. But I feel like for different projects, I want to start with more of a vibe. I want the ambiance. Like I've really come to appreciate vibes and setting, because for readers, those are so huge. And I think that's now going to be more a part of my early process, is how do I make this feel immersive in a different way than everything else, which, is hard, but
fun. I mean, that was a big thing I learned with Pitch Wars, too. Like, that was one thing that was, like, I had the world building. I didn't go deep enough. And we worked on really kind of, like, how the world building can pull out the vibe of the people.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my Pitch Wars book, it's class based. So there is like the upper class, mm-hmm. and then there is the lower class, like the slums, and that's it. And then there's like the 1%, like, and then we looked at how to establish that through like colors that they can wear with their different guilds, and not only colors, but then fabrics, and how do they wear their clothing to express how they feel about the world or about other people, or, you know, I really use that for my antagonists, and it really brought around like the vibe. I think the Baz Luhrmann kind of colorful, almost ridiculous vibe that I wanted, we got it by digging into that world, that aesthetic. So you're right.
I am so excited to read a new draft when I have the brain space to read a word, which will be soon. Yeah.
Whenever you want it.
I should just ask for it now and then just hold it out as a carrot.
Chuck it at you whenever.
I just need
I've gotten really good at chucking it at people.
Yeah. That also is a very important writerly phase to get to just be like, dang it. That's fine. Yeah.
I kind of got that way where it was like, it's not my problem anymore.
Yeah.
They're yours.
There you
go. Goodbye.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's essential for anyone who wants to be published, because that is going to be a part of your process. And there's going to be a point where you don't get to mess with it anymore. And it belongs to someone else, which is strange and scary, but also mm-hmm. like, I don't know, I think kind of the point. Like I have the, like, cause I've struggled with this. Like people say, don't read reviews, which I understand why they say that. But I had this point over the past few months where I thought, but wait, all this time I've written because it brought me joy and because I wanted other people to be a part. I didn't want to just write for yourself, sure. But, like, I could write for myself without publishing it. If I'm publishing it, right. I want other people to read it. And then suddenly it's like you go from sharing it with your critique partners and sharing it with just other people to everyone being like, all right, we'll never just pay no attention, close your ears, don't listen when people are talking about it. And it's like, but wait, but I didn't write this book to throw it out there and then be like, la, 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 I'm not a part of the conversation. Like, it's a weird place to be where you're like, all right, well, you need to find your comfort zone. But again, in my opinion, you don't publish a book to never hear what someone thinks about it. It's just like, what can you handle? So yeah, for me at least, every once in a while, I'll, like, take a peek or I'll try to, like, just see the 5-star reviews or someone will tag me and I'll take the plunge and read stuff. And for the most part, I found it very rewarding because they don't have to love every bit of it. But I'm like, all right, yeah, I wrote it because I wanted people to read it. And if they're going to read it, I also want – I don't want to hide myself in a room and pretend I didn't put it out there. That makes any sense?
No, I totally understand that.
So, yeah.
I think that's where people have the, like, dedicated friends who check your Goodreads for you, right? Like, to pass along. Like, here are all the, like, if you can say, I want all the reviews that are above 3 stars.
Yeah.
Please ignore everything else, you know? Yeah. Give me the 4- and 5-star reviews. And then you can send those, like, have friends put them in a folder or something like that. That way you can get the benefit of hearing reader feedback and delighting in that joy mm-hmm. without the sting of the other stuff.
And I think there's also something to be said for learning the difference between this wasn't for me versus you suck. Because there is a huge difference. And that's why I actually think mentorships and critique partners, I think that's part of their greatest value, is that, like, learning to handle critique or feedback is important for becoming better, but it's also just important because if you're publishing something, people are not all going to love it. And they can't. There's not a book on the planet. Like, there's the best books. If someone made a list of the 100 best books on the planet, I guarantee you 75 of them, I'm going to be like, I don't want to read it. I don't want to.
Right.
I don't want to.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to. That does not mean that book is not one of the best books. It means I don't want to read it. And so the ability to be like, okay, like, this person is like, eh, you know, this trope isn't for me or these characters aren't for me is not an insult. Is hugely valuable. And I think doing so many mentorships and honestly spending so long in the query trenches really helped me get in a good headspace for that.
Yeah.
Because, I am okay with it. If someone's like, yeah, it was fine. I didn't love it. Okay. Okay. It's fine. If someone says, like, this writer is the worst and should die in a fire, well, then I'm going to be upset. But if they're like, it was fine. Right. It just wasn't my favorite book ever. Okay, cool. Like, great. Awesome. Thank you for reading.
Right.
Cool. I actually talked to an author who I will not name. But is lovely and has a book that I think is going to be huge, who commented the other day and said, turns out that once your book comes out, it's a lot easier to handle critique. Because the difference between someone who got it for free saying, I didn't like it, and someone who paid $20 for it going, eh, I'm not sure I should have paid $20 for it, feels very different. And I thought, well, that's another valuable lesson is, like, critique feels different depending on the context. So,
right,
you
know,
that's
right.
been a lesson I have embraced recently.
That's smart. That's a really good distinction, too. I never even thought about that.
Yeah. I always think, like, how many books do you absolutely, like, obsessively love? Not very many. Mm-hmm. We've read a lot, but you can only have so many favorite books. So
right. That's what, I don't know. It's a different conversation for a different day. Yeah. But we've been talking about the querying process and how flawed it is.
Yeah.
The whole, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's something that I want to talk about, but the...
I feel you.
Delete this later, but it's very flawed. And I think the one of the things that brought it up was the subjectivity of it all. Yeah. And especially with one and done agencies that are you query one like, and you're done with the whole agency. And it's like,
I never liked that. Because we're trying to guess who likes what and we don't know that. And
And most agents say in their wish list or in their bios, I don't know what I like until I read it. And
I don't think you have to delete this. I think that's important. That's not a critique. I think that's fair. Okay. I mean, I think, well, the way I always see it is, and I think I've said this on the podcast before, is we treat ourselves sometimes like if someone doesn't want to represent our book or doesn't want to buy our book, that they are rejecting our book. But if you walk into a bookstore tomorrow to buy a book and you buy a book, you did not reject the other 10,000 books in that store. You just picked a book. And with querying, the way we have it set up is you are the book trying to chase around the readers, trying to figure out which reader wants your book, instead of the readers going and picking the book they want. And then we're being like, oh man, I followed this guy around the bookstore and he didn't buy me, therefore my book is terrible. Like, no, what we did, you didn't know how to pick the person. And I don't know what the solution is for it, but it's a really hard, it's like matchmaking, but it's not equal matchmaking.
It's not equal matchmaking at all. Like, I've heard a couple of people that I've talked to have a kind of ingenious way that would have lots of flaws and it would have to be worked out, but it's, they have a couple of answers to this idea of queries not reaching the agents that they're meant to reach or like given a fair chance to be seen. I don't know what the solution is, but I think there is something out there that is better than this.
Yeah,
that's antiquated system.
Agreed. I don't know what it is, but yeah, and I even as a Pitch Wars mentor, I think this every year, which at some point we should talk about Pitch Wars ending. But like every, like as a Pitch Wars mentor, I value certain things. Like I value, say, like voice or prose. Like someone can pitch me the coolest concept ever, but if I don't connect with the characters, then I'm not interested. Where someone else might be like, oh, it's fine. Like, if I love your concept, I will help you connect with the character. Like, we all have just, like, different doorways, the things that get us hooked. And I think that's one of the hardest things about figuring out which, like, agent or which editor is right for you is because you're trying to figure out what is their thing. And I almost wish there was a magical way of being like, but I don't know. Like, I think of my editor and I think of, like, I finally, after reading so many of her books, I'm like, okay, I get it now. Now I get what her thing is, what makes a book her book. But it took reading a dozen books over years to figure that out. Right. And authors can't do that with dozens of agents, so I don't know.
Right.
It feels like there should be a solution, but I don't have one.
Sorry,
everyone.
I wish there was
one. Yeah, it's hard. It is, but
I'm going to flip the script.
Go for it.
How was Pitch Wars for you?
Oh.
As a mentor again.
It was great. I will pat myself on the back and say I have a knack for picking wonderful mentees, which is I don't get to really take credit for. You know, like I read manuscripts and I struggle and I pull my hair out because there are so many options and I've only done it twice. But I got lucky both times. I got lucky and had mentees who were in it to do the work, who wanted to learn, who were excited to form friendships above and beyond that. And so, you know, I got what I wanted from it, which was I felt like I made a difference. I felt like my mentee really like took the stuff that I had to offer and applied it and grew and learned. And she has accepted that I'm never letting her go. So that's been great too. We actually have, Yay. We have processed all the Pitch Wars drama. We discovered a very dramatic Italian YA dramatic show. And that has been our like little lifeboat, you know, and all that's going on and all the stress is that we are watching the show together. And it's just been lovely to have someone to scream about it. So Aww. I'm so proud of her. She's Yay. Had such a great attitude and also has been honest with us the whole time, which has been wonderful. So
she's awesome.
She is. She's awesome. So yeah, I had a great experience, which is good because Pitch Wars is
because it's
a gone now.
It's over.
I know.
Not over.
Yeah.
Over.
Which is a sad. And I.
It is a sad.
I found that out the night before because I was an advisor to the Pitch Wars committee. So I found out the night before. And so I got to spend a solid 12 hours being emotional and dramatic by myself.
Right.
But yeah, I'm sorry to see it go. I think there are brilliant, brilliant people out there that are excited to come up with, you know, the next new thing. But yeah, you know, it's the end of an era, which is hard, but I understand. It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot. People don't realize how much work it is.
It's so much work. I made it a thing to work really hard that whenever people started to get upset at the system, mm-hmm. I would jump in and be like, hey, just as a reminder, did you talk to somebody about that? Because they're just volunteers.
Just a bunch of volunteers. Like,
let's learn how to communicate
because
they're volunteers. You can ask that question. And if that question doesn't get answered, you have 12 other people that you can ask that question to and they will answer it for you. Like, it's run by volunteers. I don't know. And I think that's like the part that hit me the hardest was not the contest itself. Like, this is, I know it's somebody listening to this is like, yeah, you got to be in it twice. It's easy for you to say. But truthfully, I think the thing that I'm most sad to see go is all of the resource building mm-hmm. and all of the opportunities throughout the year that are gone. Like, that, I know something will come in its wake. Yeah. Things always do. And I think something should come in its wake.
Yeah, agreed.
But it was just kind of a nostalgic thing of like, this organization has given so much throughout the year. It's given blog posts, it's given videos, it's given resources and tips and connections. And I don't know. That was really sad and really hard to hear be gone.
Yeah. It was. I can't say I'm completely surprised. I feel like I've sensed it coming for a long time. You know, I've been a mentee. I've been a friend of mentors. I've been a mentor. I've been an advisor for years and years. And I did not know it was coming. But when I got the email that said an important announcement, I knew what it was. That makes any sense, you know?
Yeah.
It was that like, oh, this is happening. And I get it. You know, it's been 10 years and I would like to just bow down at Brenda's feet and Kelly's feet and so many of the people that were involved from the beginning because they've worked so hard. I understand why they ended it when they did. And the greatest thing is their legacy lives on and there are people out there that have benefited from this program who are go-getters. I won't name them, but maybe they've been on this podcast, who are out there thinking of the next thing and the void will be filled. But yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. I think that's the nature of things.
Yeah.
Just the longer I observe things in writing or in life is that something will cause a wave of goodness and each person touched by that will also cause a wave of goodness. Mm-hmm. Like, those people will extend a hand, and the more people we have extending hands, the greater something can be and it can grow and it can change and it can fit the world we're in right now.
Agreed.
And
yeah, I think that's huge because I think it is – people can be cynical all they want to, but the one thing that I got from Pitch Wars was when you get the benefit of having someone volunteer their time to work with your book, and I'm not even pretending that it's a one-sided thing because I have gained just as much from being a mentor as I got from being a mentee, but being the recipient of that, you feel very thankful and you want to pay it forward, and that's the coolest thing. Actually – Slight tangent. When I was a psychology student, undergraduate, one of my good friends worked for a professor or was a student with a professor who was studying something called elevation, which they were proposing as the sixth emotion or something, which was the feeling you get when you witness an act of altruism that makes you want to do a good thing. So basically like why people used to watch Oprah. You watch the feel-good stories and then you're like, I want to go donate to charity or save a cat from a tree.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the most wonderful aspects of humanity is that, like, when you see a good thing or when you experience a good thing, you want to do a good thing. And yeah. It's a good reminder that, like, we all have the ability to be the catalyst and get other people excited to mm-hmm. do good things. And there are so many people out there right now that are looking for a way to give back to other writers. And so I'm excited to see what they come up with. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Big feelings.
Big feelings. Like good feelings. Good feelings. Sad feelings. Yeah. Big feelings.
But
it's okay.
Yeah. Lots of feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah. This feels like a wrap-up point, but I don't have a wrap-up. I don't know what the wrap-up is.
We still don't know how to wrap anything up.
Should be a, maybe we should switch, like, season two should be, like, a what's a thing you've done recently that, like, made you happy or made you feel proud?
Oh, I love that. What brought you joy?
I read a whole book. I read a whole book in a day.
Yay!
I do have these three books to read for the panel I'm hosting. Oh, so, yeah, I read a whole book, which was Anna Marie McLemore's Lake Lore. And also, on Monday, which will be in the past by the time this is posted, I am hosting MK/Remy K. England's book launch for The One True Me and You, and they came over so we could brainstorm stuff, and I got to meet their little toddler, which was really fun. So those are my joys for the week, is like, yeah, my preparation for the stuff that I have on my quote-unquote to-do list involved, like, finishing a book, which was lovely, and had characters who I felt deep in my soul, and then preparing for another event involved, like, watching a toddler walk around my backyard saying, you know, it's a bug, it's a bug, it's a bug. And I was like, this is a good, like, that's a good job when you're, the things that you are working on and maybe a little stressed about are also things that come with, like, that kind of preparation, you know? That's
right.
Cool. So, yeah, how about you? What has been your joy over the past week or so?
I have to say, being brave enough to, like, query.
Yeah.
Like to actually just shove it out there. That's been nice.
Yeah.
Being brave enough to ask Pitch Wars people for their books this time around.
Good.
I was like, give me your books.
Yes.
Yay.
Yeah.
And I already finished one, Emily Miner's
nice.
Your Better Half, which is, I am not a contemporary romance person. I told her. I was like, I'm not.
I love it.
I know. I was like, I was like, I can count on one hand how many contemporary romances I've ever read.
A snack.
And now I can add a second hand because
yes.
It was so good. I finished it. So I read a whole book.
Nice.
And that was nice. And we went on a hike. That was a really nice
you
one.
You did, like, go on a hike.
Got out,
yeah.
I did. It was great.
That's awesome.
Kicked my ass all the way.
As a hike should.
Mountain.
Yeah.
As it should. My legs are very stiff, but it reminded me that I am alive.
And y'all need that.
Know, it's all good.
Y'all need that. Yep.
Oh, I like ending it this way. This is
this
fun.
Is. we just go bye. What do we do?
I guess I don't know. I'll announce more stuff
soon
after the music is probably
playing right now. Yes, it does.
Bye. Thanks for listening to another episode of Basic Pitches. If you're interested in any of the resources that I've talked about in this podcast, I will make sure to put it in the show notes. You can also follow any of my, like, tips or anything that I've learned from Pitch Wars on my personal Instagram and Twitter. I'll make sure those are in the show notes, and we'll see you next time. Bye!